we present Lines from My Grandfather's Forehead, a sequential entertainment for radio, starring Ronnie Barker, also featuring Terence Brady and Pauline Yates, with Gordon Langford at the piano.
Good morning, Mr. Braithwaite. Sit down, won't you?
Thank you.
Now, Mr. Braithwaite, the Labour Exchange have sent you round for a job here, and I'd just like you to help me fill in this questionnaire. It's just a routine thing we do with all prospective employees. Just take down Mr. Braithwaite's replies, will you, Miss Legg?
Ready, sir.
Now then, full name?
George Pip-Pip-Pip Braithwaite.
Pardon?
George Pip-Pip-Pip Braithwaite.
I see. Address?
41 Whizbang Crash Gardens, Potted Shrimps, Sussex.
Potted Shrimps? Where is that?
It's a suburb of Horsham. Just beyond Ponky Doos on the Bedstead Road.
Ponky where?
Doos, Ponky Doos.
Age?
40.
Ah, thank you.
Inside leg, 31.
I beg your pardon?
Not at all. I enjoyed it.
Previous experience?
26 and a half.
No, Mr. Braithwaite, details of your previous experience.
Oh, 3 years in the grunt business, shining up tapioca for use in barrel organs, left there because of the parrot stuffers. Then I spent a short time going bang for a deaf drummer in the London Symphony Orchestra. Chewed parsley for Rolls Royce for a time, joined the Foreign Office as a bucket balancer, and finally unscrewed my leg and fell over.
Oh. Thank you. Oh, just one final question. What would you say was your main ambition in life?
To form a national naked ladies choir and travel around the country bringing music to millions and enjoyment to the deaf.
Right. Yes, well, I think that's all we need at the moment, Mr. Braithwaite. We'll be in touch. Thank you so much.
Not at all. Good day.
Good day.
Good day.
Well, Miss Legg?
Well, I had the feeling he didn't want the job.
Oh, dear. Well, who can we get as Prime Minister?
Ludwig van Beethoven. What a euphony of wondrous sounds that name commands. What an aura of musical majesty that name conjures up. Ludwig van Beethoven. The toast of the salons of Bonn and Vienna. And the more he played and composed, the more they cried, Ludwig, give us more. Give us more. And the more he played and composed, the more they cried. And yet, you know, he was stone deaf. Funny thing, though. Yet only a man like Beethoven could have graced the ear of mankind with sounds which he himself never heard. His symphonies echoing through the domes of palaces, his rondos and bagatelles whistled by the peasants of the Austrian vineyards. Ah, Ludwig van Beethoven. Where is the spring of that genius which pervades his masterpieces, such as this Sonata number 3?
4.
In A minor.
In E-flat major.
Opus 46?
Opus 44.
Oh, well, pretty near, wasn't I?
By Tchaikovsky.
Oh.
Good morning, darling.
Morning, darling.
Toast.
Two, please.
Won't be a second. There we are.
Thanks. Here. You're not my wife.
I know.
Well, what's the idea?
Husband swapping.
What?
Your wife and I had the idea. She is no doubt at this very moment making breakfast for Harold, my husband.
Where?
At my house.
Well, I didn't hear her leave the house this morning.
She didn't. She left last night.
Well, I slept with her last night.
No, you didn't.
Good God. I wondered why you wouldn't put the light on.
Well, you were rather late home, weren't you? I was tired.
You weren't as tired as all that. Anyway, that's not the point. I'm not sure that I want my wife making breakfast for someone else's husband.
Aren't you? You can't have your cake and eat it, you know.
No, perhaps not.
And you certainly proved to be quite a sweet tooth last night.
Now listen, Mrs.
Russell.
Mrs. Russell, I don't wish to appear ungrateful, but I really think my wife should have told me. She said she was going to her mother's.
Really?
Yes. So the whole of last night she was lying.
Yes, but not at her mother's.
No. How long is this arrangement going on for?
Only only the one night.
Oh.
You're with, Mrs. Hartley tomorrow night.
What?
Mrs. Hartley.
What, that enormous woman across the road?
Well, you've got to take the rough or the smooth.
Rough's right. I shall take the bulb out of the light tomorrow, then. Listen, do the police know about this?
They will tomorrow night. I'm with Police Constable Vickers.
Now, look, you're making all this up.
Yes, I am, actually. No, it's just you and me and Harold and Penelope. We thought it'd make a nice change, and it has, hasn't it?
Yes, yes, I must admit it has. But there's just one point we have to clear up. Who is Penelope?
Penelope. Your wife, Penelope.
No, 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 no. My wife's name is Judith.
What?
You've come to the wrong house, haven't you? Last night, in the dark, you came to the wrong house. My wife's name's Judith, and she is at her mother's.
Oh, God.
You haven't got any more of that delicious cake, have you?
There you are, my beauty. 4 for the road. That's 28 for me, miss. 7 bob a shoe.
Call it 30 shillings. Thank you, Sammy.
Thank you, miss. 30 bob. Marvellous, isn't it? When I first started up on my own, living in digs in the village more than 30 years ago, whoa, you could have raised a family on 30 bob a week. Did I know? It's our wedding anniversary today. Yep. 28 years, hard labour. I remembered to buy her a present. The only trouble was I forgot where I put the damn thing. So when I brought her up a cup of tea this morning, I said, many happy returns, love. By the way, did you happen to see a brown paper parcel anywhere? Well, when it comes out, you see, I'd lost it. So she says, try looking on top of the wardrobe. That's where you usually leave things. Then I remember where I'd put it. Yeah, I'd popped it in the fridge. Still, it didn't make all that difference. Just meant the soft centres were a bit hard. But you got to laugh sometimes, didn't you? Either that or swear. You know, I'd rather have 4 laughs than 4 letters. Do you know what I was thinking? I was just thinking the day that I popped the question. I'd made up my mind the night before, actually, when I got back to my digs, and there was Friday's steak and kidney dressed up in its Sunday best. Sammy, I said, you got to get out of this, I said. Pretty quick and all, even if it means walking into matrimony. Any more of them cold puddings is going to affect your future as well as your functions. You see, I'd already got my eye on this place. Nice little cottage with a smithy just across the lane. Very quiet. Only 5 minutes walk from the village. Only 3 minutes from the pub. Anyway, Molly and me had been walking out regular for the best part of a year, and I was due to take to the village fete next day, so I said to myself, she's fond of run of beans, I said. I'll ask her in the vegetable tent. Mind you, she was a pretty piece with Molly. Yeah, still is. A bit like the cricket pitch over at Farley, bumps in all the right places. Anyhow, when we got there, the vegetable tent was that full you couldn't hardly move, so I knew the veg was off. Well, just then, the fire brigade band starts up with my brother Cyril on the cymbals. God, a real smasher he was when he got them cymbals in his hands. Oh, yeah. Anyway, she says, I do like a bit of music. All right, I says, you shall have it. So I leads her right up to it. If we got any nearer, we'd have had the trombone in her om-bom-bom. Then I said me piece. Can't remember exactly what it was, but when I finished, I said to her, well, girl, what about it, eh? She didn't answer. Not at first, she didn't. Well, I'll give her time, I thought, so I counted 5 and asked her again, and do you know what she said? Well, I'll always remember. She looked at trombone, and then she looked at me, and she said, well, I think I'd rather have less of that and more of the other. Turned out you hadn't heard a word I said. Not a word. Mind you, later on that night, up the back of old Jess Lee's stackyard, well, she heard me then, all right. Yeah. No trombones up there. She said yes in a flash. If you asked me, she'd heard the first time, because she'd got it all planned out. Oh, date and everything. I reckon she'd been playing me along all the time. And 3 weeks later, she ran off with an insurance man from Gloucester, and I finished up with my Janet. Well, probably just as well. Funny old life, though, isn't it? Hello, Jack. What, you been having a lie-in, then? What time your call is, eh? Oh, dear.
No, this really won't do at all. Turn back, please, to page 5, bar 14. Now, Robin, do try and hit those high notes absolutely clearly. Now, let me hear that phrase again, please. Good, that's it. That's just like that. That's fine. Right, we shall take it again from letter C on page 5. 1, 2, 3. Good. Good, that's very good, good. Now let's really have it from the goldfinches. No. What's the beat? Hold it. Please. Now, I've told you once, blackbirds, I don't want to have to say it again. I will not have you coming in staccato at letter D. Keep it legato. Let those notes flow. Right, bar 28. Everyone ready?
What do you want?
But you've only just been. Really, you must try and remember to go before you come to rehearsal. I'm sorry, you'll just have to wait. Right, here we go then. 2 bars before, letter F on 3. 1, 2, 3. Yes, very good. That's good, darling. Just keep the rhythm steady. Lovely, very good. Right, that's enough. Thank you. Right, now I think we'll hear it with the orchestra.
Well, Sir Harold, I don't know if your answer will fully satisfy Mr. Coggins on the line from Burnley. I wonder, is there anything more you'd like to add before we take the next telephone call and introduce a new questioner?
I'd just like to say to Mr.
Coggins. Mr. Coggins from Burnley.
Coggins. I feel that we, as a nationalised industry, and here I emphasise the word industry, must primarily take account of the profitability factor. But at the same time, we must also take account of all the other factors, for all factors are of equal importance, or unimportance, according to one's point of view.
Are you quite satisfied with that answer, Mr. Coggins? He's rung off. Our next telephone call comes from Mrs. Hilary Fielding of Little Brampton, Hampshire. Are you there, Mrs. Fielding?
Yes.
Good. Then if you'd put your question to Sir Harold Hutchinson.
Yes. Good evening, Sir Harold.
Good evening, Mrs.
Fielding.
Good evening, Mrs. Fielding.
My question is this. Do you, as head of our major fuel corporation, think that we have anything to fear from a worldwide glut of overproduction?
Thank you. Well, Sir Harold, have we anything to fear from a worldwide glut?
Little Brampton, eh? Perhaps you knew, Mrs. Fielding, I was brought up in Little Brampton.
Actually, I knew a Harold Hutchinson before the war. I didn't know whether it was the same.
Yeah, I think it must have been. Tell me, do you still get tufted ducks on the pond?
Oh, yes. And mallards. And the geese still waddle up the lane from Hyde Park to farm.
Do they really? And do you...
Yes, quite. But, Sir Harold, surely competition from America...
just a minute. Do you remember the vicar, Mr. Woodthorpe? How he used to feed the ducks?
Oh! Still does.
Really?
Retired now, of course, but he still feeds the ducks. A bit unsteady on his pins now. Has to be pulled out of the pond once or twice a week. Nothing's altered, though.
Yeah, it never seems to in the countryside. Yeah,
absolutely, Sir Harold. The Economist published some rather alarming figures.
Quite.
I thought
does
about.
The sun still shine every day at Little Brampton?
It seems to. Mm. And that thorn hedge up Farmhouse Lane is just the same. The one that runs by Larkspur Cottage.
Well, but that's where I used to live.
I thought it must have been you, Harold.
Hilary? Not Hilary Fitzbenson.
Yes, that's right.
Sir Harold, if the world market is good...
Hilary, I'm sorry I stopped writing. It was the army, you know, and I had fallen arches and my parents moved.
Don't worry, Harold. I got over it.
Why are we so stupid when we're young? When I think of the fields and the lanes and the wonderful times we had together. I work on the 18th floor now, with an interminable view of smoke and industry.
Now, the fuel industry is, of course, well, just one aspect
the
of the...
The corn's just ripening, and the poppies are nodding among the golden fields.
Oh, Hilary, I still think of you, and those never-ending sunlit days. Can we meet? May I come back to Little Brampton?
Yes, of course, Harold. Let's meet at noon on Sunday in the Pheasant. You remember the Pheasant? The pub on the green?
Ah.
My husband will be delighted to meet you.
Oh.
And I'll bring my four eldest children along as well. I've got seven now, you know.
Really? Well, as a major nationalized industry, it is our role to provide fuel as cheaply as possible, but in the event of a world glut, this could have beneficial effects on the one hand. On the other, of course, the effect could be detrimental. The minister has made it clear, and I have gone on record as agreeing with him.
We present The Dawn After the Dark, the political memoirs of Alderman Silas Puddlewick. Part 7, 1968-1969, The Years of Achievement.
October 1968 found me at the crossroads in my political career. The Puddlewick hardware stores were thriving, but my standing in the council stood at the nadir of its fortunes. The leaves of my support had fallen away, and I seemed to be in the autumn twilight of my influence. I was isolated from the rest of my party by my uncompromising views on the provision of a bus shelter for the corner of Inkerman Street and the Mafeking Villas. I was a politician in the wilderness. But such are the exigencies of the political roundabout, within 2 months, Alderman Branthorpe, leader of our majority group on the council, had left the district to open a sweet shop in Skegness. Suddenly there emerged a power vacuum when personal differences are laid aside in the overriding quest to find the right man to serve the hour.
Well, Councillor Ponsford, as far as I'm concerned, you're the only man to lead the council.
Me? Oh, I've not time to lead party, or in my model aircraft.
Well, don't look at me, lad. I'm on board a Wanderers, aren't I? How about you, Mrs. Jenkins? First lady leader in the town. Do you fancy that?
Oh, no, thank you very much. I've other fish to fry.
Well, is there anybody else?
Hey, your partner. Double top, plus 14 from 250. What's that?
Hey, wait on. There is old, what's his name? You know, fat chap, sticking out ears, never pays for a round. You know him.
And so, emerging from their long and fevered round of lobbying and consultations, my colleagues convinced me that I was the only man for that troubled time. They reconciled themselves to my unorthodox attitudes, knowing that the moment reveals the man. Thus destiny thrust her charge upon me. The call to high office came in Ponsford's fruit and vegetable market.
There you are, Silas. £4 if King Edward's in a collie. And would you like to lead party in council? You're the only one who hasn't said no. We'll support you if you play down your Inkerman Street bush shelter policy.
Thank you, Douglas. Without giving any categorical assurances on the main platform of my policies, I accept. I can say that you will not find your trust in me betrayed. I shall not be found wanting.
That'll be two and a penny. Have you got the penny?
Oh.
Even at that supremely emotional moment in my career, I was still politician enough to avoid committing myself to any specific course of action. A bus shelter for the corner of Inkerman Street and Mafeking Villas was the mould which shaped my political creed. Only those close to me could really appreciate its significance. My wife understood and gave substance to my enthusiasm.
Oh, you're home late.
Lettuce, I've just been elected leader of the council.
Oh, more late-night sittings in the chamber, I suppose.
A man has to do his duty.
Well, I wish you'd show a bit of interest in my whist.
Hmm?
That Lottie Green took my Queen of Hearts tonight. I led with a 10. Millie played low, a 3, I think it was. And then Lottie trumped it.
I took up the reins of office, and it was not long before I came into headlong collision with the entrenched bureaucrats, the town clerk's office. However, I soon asserted the dignity of my position by overriding red tape and petty economic considerations.
Now, if you'd only let me explain...
Make no mistake, Blunt. I categorically insist that council minutes shall be written on one side of the paper only. without let or hindrance.
But we've always written them on one side only.
I don't care. Things are going to be done my way from now on.
My authority now established in the minds of the town's officials, I was ready to let the council feel the smack of firm government.
And let me say just this. There is an irresistible breeze of progress blowing along Mafeking Villas. An unstoppable tide of advance is pouring down the heights of Quebec Row.
Here, here.
The folk of Income and Street are no longer prepared to be battened down in the holds of the ship of this town. The Captain Cooks, the Major Domos, and the Admirable Critchlands.
Yeah, what's he talking about?
Don't know.
Well, look, how long has he been going on? It's nearly closing time.
That I propose.
I'm going off the
Yes, I left the council in no doubt as to my intentions. In no time, the influential Weekly Argus had been stirred by my speech, and 6 weeks later, they sent round one of their most distinguished reporters, a pimply, ferret-faced youth of 16, to interview me. Over a mug of beef extract in the scullery, I spent nearly an hour explaining the necessity of the bus shelter for Income Street, with information on prevailing winds, the latest rainfall figures, diagrams of the traffic flow.
Well, I really only came about the marriage you're growing for the horticultural show.
Inspired by the interest my policies were arousing, I led a group of my fellow councillors, doubters within the ranks of my own party, to the heart of the crisis zone, the corner of Income and Street.
You see, Mrs. Jenkins, imagine the housewife waiting for a bus, here, loaded with shopping bags, a child under each arm, a dog tugging at his lead. Hey, imagine the poor woman being cut to shreds by this howling gale.
It's only a narrow pavement, and put a shelter on it, and folks will have to walk out into road to get round and get mown down by corporation dust carts and such like.
At this moment, I realised with perception born of experience that there was to be no easy passage for my enlightened policies. I had to win over my own followers, the vested interests, the conservationists who said a bus shelter would spoil the view of Cranlow Cement Works. It was one of those times when a public man can only turn for comfort to his loved ones.
Lettuce, will you warm my feet up?
Oh, no, they're too cold.
Oh, go on, love.
Oh, you ought to wear your boots in bed like everybody else.
Oh, it's this Income and Street crisis it makes me.
Oh, does it really? Oh. I can imagine. It's like me tonight when spades were trumps. I led out hearts. I was strong in them. Millie played low, a five, I think. Lottie threw away her club, and then Hetty trumped it.
But when a man is challenged in his hour of need, he must summon up his sinews and steel himself to the task ahead. Was it Gladstone who said, "A week in politics is a long time"? My week of decision was the first fortnight in February. My diplomatic sources informed me that my opposite number in Wilsley, our neighbouring town, would welcome an informal meeting for negotiation. Frank Dutton, a bull of a man with no eyebrows, was a shrewd bargainer with a distinguished war record in the catering corps. I'd long nursed the thought of a summit meeting with him. With swift decision, I took the opportunity and the 92 bus to the Great Pyramid, a hostelry which lies midway between our two towns.
I know, Perwick, how you've devoted your career to the Income and Street question. Now, I've pinned my future to the provision of a shelter for Acacia Drive in Wilsley. I expect you know the 92 bus. The link between our towns uses both these stops. An economic arrangement suggests itself.
Well, anything to save money always goes down well.
Now, we would be prepared to provide 25% of the finance for your Income and Street shelter, with you providing the other 75%, if you're prepared to repeat the arrangement for Acacia Drive.
Oh, that means we'd only have to provide 75% of the cost of each of them. On the cheap, eh?
No, I meant... Well, if you really insist, have a cheese draw.
All time.
So, after countless hours of steely negotiation, a significant bargain was wrung out of the Wilsley Council. It only remained to convince the leading rebel in my own party, Douglas Ponsford, a dangerous, wildy beast of a man, with a Scotch wife. As so often in politics, it was a formal social occasion which presented the opportunity. The public health inspector's birthday party. That's what it's all about. That's it, Douglas. You support me, and you support an economical and vote-catching measure of the greatest magnitude, a measure of far-reaching consequences for our community. And I'll let you have this book of raffle tickets free.
Righto, lad. Anything you say.
Yeah, and top this up, will you?
Are you sure? That's your bowler up.
At last, I had won recognition for the rights of the ordinary man. Yes, the sturdy folk of Inkerman Street had burst the change which had battened them in the hold. The vote was passed, and the bush shelter now stands proud, an everlasting monument to the tenacity with which I pursued my beliefs from the wilderness to high office, took the famous unstoppable tide of advance at the flood, and what more can a public man say than this? Did my duty.
Flaming concrete monstrosity.
They might have remembered to put a roof on the flaming thing. Proper draft tunnel. I'll stand in a shop doorway like I always do. Whose idea was this thing, anyway?
It is with humility that I receive the gratitude heaped upon me by the teeming crowds who throng the Inkerman Street bus shelter. And to me, it is the ultimate satisfaction to feel that when the days were dark, our people turned to me, and I could show them the way to the dawn.
I will not cease from men to fight, nor shall my sword stay in my hand, till we have built Jerusalem in England's green and pleasant land.
Oh, mickle yukes the kittledoop, an orange sicker gurns the grief, for way and way the crowdish loop, for jug and hallen, brow and breath. The greasy racks with skelping keys, nae mair the howdy bickle wangs, nor weenies in their wee bit clays, glower light as lammies, wi' songs. Yet leaves mum a bonny bike, my drappy elbins blanks the new, and lee some love as lop the dyke, for gathering just a wee bit foo. In Scotia, while their hunting lunges mark and moot, but going's fine, I'll stolen Pitsman Cobrant, and cleek my duds, pay all lang syne.
Three boys were standing in the village stream. The old man bellowed, "Oi, come out of there. You'll cut your feet to ribbons on them stones. They're poisonous, them weeds, or don't you care? Look well if you got stuck in that there mud and someone had to come and get you free. The water's full of tins and broken glass."
The boys looked up and rubbed a muddy knee with a wet hand, but stayed there in the stream. The old man glared, but saw it was in vain, and muttering, "You'll catch your death of cold," stumped off, and wished he was a boy again.
You've been listening to Lines from My Grandfather's Forehead, starring Ronnie Barker, with Terence Brady, Pauline Yates, and Gordon Langford at the piano. The lines were written by Chris Allen, J.H.B. Peel, Alan Scott and Chris Bryant, Peter Spence, and Gerald Wiley. The program was produced by John Fawcett Wilson.